My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Every religion and faith share their respective vision of the afterlife. There are those who have had NDEs, near-death experiences, and have returned to share new, wonderful, and transcendent concepts, often contrary to what their respective faiths have taught them. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Nancy Dannison, had this very experience. A highly successful and dedicated lawyer and trial attorney, Nancy had a near-death experience in 1994 at the age of 43 that gave her a new perspective on life and afterlife. She shared her experiences in 5 books, including her groundbreaking Backwards series. Her website is backwardsbooks.com, and she joins me this week to share her path and latest book, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Please join me in welcoming back Nancy Dannison. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, thank you for having me back, Victor.
So wonderful to have you back and to share your latest book. Nancy, you've written 5 books in your series. The first 3 were called Backwards Returning to Source for Answers. Backwards Guidebook was number 2. Backwards Beliefs, Revealing Eternal Truths Hidden in Religions was number 3, and then Answers from the Afterlife, and the latest, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. So Nancy, we're going to share with our listeners who are meeting you for the first time, your experience, your life, and how all of this wonderful work manifested. So please share with us your early path and beliefs about life and death before your experience.
I was raised as a Roman Catholic. I went to Roman Catholic elementary school and high school, and then I went to a Methodist college for 6 years. I got 2 degrees, one a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry and Biology with a concentration in Anatomy and Physiology, and then the second one, a Bachelor of Arts degree in Psychology. So I was well into the Christian tradition. And then I went to law school and got well into the devilish tradition, some people would say.
So much of your education was grounded in science, including chemistry and biology. How did those studies shape your original outlook?
I believed in science. I did. I thought science had all the answers. I thought you could do an experiment or do research and find the answers. But I was not finding the answers to the things that mattered the most to me, Victor. I wanted to know, what's the purpose of life? What am I supposed to be doing? You know, what does God expect of me? And I wasn't finding answers that resonated with me until I died. Then I got the answers.
Then you got the answers. What motivated you to study law and practice it?
Well, I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but I was going to go to medical school. But when I graduated from college with my original chemistry and biology degree, I discovered that my college wasn't well regarded by medical schools, and I couldn't get a scholarship. So I thought, well, I got to come up with a plan B. So I took a whole bunch of tests, and I scored the best on the law school admission test. So I went to law school, which was completely different from anything I'd ever expected. But I tried to apply science to law. And so I found I could research and find the answers. And that was okay with me.
And much of your law practice was dedicated to advocating for others. How did you receive that calling?
Well, because I wanted to be a doctor in the first place, I always believed that my life was for the purpose of helping others. That's the way my parents raised me. That had always been my focus. And in the law, I found that I could help healthcare providers hospitals and doctors and any kind of healthcare provider with their business questions. And eventually I got into Medicare and Medicaid law. And so I felt like I was helping the healthcare providers and their patients by getting payment for them.
And you taught advocacy. Tell us how important, a lot of people don't realize how important it is not only to receive advocacy on their behalf, but to self-advocate.
It is particularly important in the healthcare field to self-advocate. My understanding of advocacy is standing up and speaking out for what you know to be true. And I learned, you know, as an advocate in the legal profession, you say something once and then you explain it and then you say it again so that three times you've gotten the message across to somebody. And I believe that that is really, really important in healthcare, particularly in those situations where you might not always get a lot of time with your physician or other healthcare provider. So you've got to go in prepared to say, these are my symptoms. This is how I feel. And if you feel like it and want to, this is what I think is wrong. And if your healthcare provider won't listen to you or poo-poos you, go somewhere else.
I personally had an experience recently where I received a bill from a laboratory after some tests that were done for me. These were routine tests. They weren't anything specific, no illness involved. But I had some routine tests, and I got a bill from the health insurance company saying they're not going to pay the claim. I advocated on my behalf. I got my doctor's office involved, and they dismissed the charge.
See,
but had I not raised my voice, that never would have happened.
Yes, and I'm not talking about raising your voice to complain. I get a lot of that on the internet. I'm sure you do too. I'm talking about stating your truth.
That's it. And when I say raising my voice, it was stating my truth. It wasn't complaining. It was just saying, this is not correct.
That's right. And a lot of times people make mistakes. So you point out their mistake and then let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely. And today, especially today, with as much pressure as there is on the medical profession and the insurance professions and so on, it's really important to be on top of these things.
Yes.
Now, you were a partner in a 270 attorney law firm. How did you go from that reality to writing 5 spiritual books?
Oh, I did it the easy way. I died. Everything else was really hard. Literally, that was the dividing line in my life. I had a very successful national health law practice at my firm, and I loved my partners and associates, and then I died. And while I was in the afterlife, one of the things that struck me the hardest, out of 50 million things that struck me the hardest, was I was shown how shallow my life had been because I was pursuing money and success. And over, I was shown opportunities where I turned down the experience of love so that I could work. And that just, you know, so that helped propel me into changing my life. And also I felt like, you know, I came back from the afterlife with all my beliefs changed. I felt adrift. I knew I was going to have a difficult road ahead. I just wanted to go back home. And I did not want to put my firm and my partners and their finances at risk while I floundered. So I left and set up my own law firm. Just me, myself, and I.
Let's share with our listeners your experience of death. First of all, what happened physically that caused it?
I was in the hospital for surgery to remove what they suspected were 3 cancer tumors in my right breast. And ladies, not all cancers leave a lump, at least not in the early stages, but they can leave calcium deposits on a mammogram. So that's what was seen. But because there was no lump for the surgeon to feel for, a radiologist did a procedure called a needle localization procedure using a mammogram and inserted a large bore needle with a wire inside of it. And then when she was finished after doing it twice and taking 8 mammograms, she pulled the needle out and left the wire there, drew a little diagram for the surgeon, you know, cut around here. That procedure lasted like an hour and a half. It wasn't supposed to. She was having a really hard time getting the needle in the middle of the 3 lesions. And all that she used was a local anesthetic on my skin, but I was allergic to it. And so when the radiologist and the radiology technician left the room to go get the last set of films developed, I left too. I left my body and went into first blackness and then the light. And I spent a lot of time in the light getting information. And that's when I got the information about how shallow my life had been. Got a lot more information about humans and what they're, who they are and what they are, and then what I am and who I am as a spiritual entity. And I had a very extensive and what would be called a deep afterlife experience. I had a life review. I was able to get the answers to my questions. You know, who is God? Who am I? What's the purpose of life? What does God expect of me? Where's heaven? Where's hell? And what's the one true religion? Because, you know, the Catholic Church says it's the one true religion. I watched, because I was so upset by the answers I got to those questions. I mean, they weren't anything like I had learned in school or in church or from my parents. And I felt like, am I like the only stupid person on earth? Did everybody know, you know, these true answers except me? And I was just angry, and I was surprised you can be angry in heaven, but you can. But in response to that anger, I was shown a documentary movie of the development of religion on earth, which also included earth's creation and its ultimate demise, I guess you would call it. After that, I was calmed down a little bit. I had met my 5 most beloved eternal friends shortly after I entered the afterlife. And with them, I went through the stage of afterlife that I call virtual reality or virtual living. I could merge myself into them and selectively experience events from their lives. And I could live those events either as them or as me. It was freaky. And eventually I got to the point where I could do all 5 of them at once, and we could be a collective entity of 6. And they told me that it was important that I learn how to do this in order to, for lack of a better word, merge into the creator. So after what went through all this virtual living stuff, I started merging into or being absorbed by the creator. And in that process, I saw and remembered creation of the universe from start to its ultimate resolution. After that, I just woke up. I woke up to the knowledge that I am source. I am the creator. I am God. I am the entity I've been worshiping my whole life. Not all of it, of course, but a little tiny part of it. I knew I have never been alone. I'd never been adrift in the world. I'd never been left for lost. I had never had any reason to be afraid, because I am source. And so are you and everybody else. And when I got all this information, Victor, I kept saying to myself subconsciously, somebody ought to tell those people, meaning the people down on earth. And I kept saying, somebody ought to tell those people. And the next thing I know, I'm whirling back into Nancy's body saying, I didn't mean me. Get somebody else to tell those people. And so while I was in this whirlwind back to the body, I started memorizing as much as I could from what I'd learned. And that's what's in my books.
Now, were you pronounced clinically dead, or was this a near-death experience?
I wasn't pronounced, but I was clinically dead. I was by myself. And the radiologist and radiology technician came back into the room before I came back into the body. And once I got back into the body enough that I could move her mouth, and it felt like I was like talking through a long tube, and it was hard to get the lips to move, I said, I passed out. And the radiologist called a nurse from out in the hallway who came into my blood pressure, and it was 60 over nothing.
Wow.
And it rose from there, but it took half an hour to come back up to normal.
How long was the actual experience of death, and how long did it seem?
I don't know how long actually, because I don't know what time the radiologist and technician left or what time they came back, but piecing it together with them, we figured it is 10 to 15 minutes that I was gone. And it seemed like a lifetime and 2 seconds, both.
Mm, absolutely. Tell us more about what you learned about life, death, creation, and our place in all of this.
Wow, where do you want me to start?
Start with life. Why are we here?
What I experienced and remembered while I was in the afterlife is that source is an energy field, an energy source, which is why I call it source. It's not anything like a human or any other physical creature. It has no physical mass whatsoever, just energy. But it's intelligent, creative, has a sense of humor, has all kinds of personality traits, unconditionally loving, unconditionally accepting, curious beyond measure. And it was that curiosity that propelled the source to create the universe. Its purpose was to have others, to have someone or something to bounce itself off of, to experience what it's like to have a give and take, to have a relationship or relationships with, you know, zillions and zillions of creatures and things. But the idea that Source had was to put its self-awareness and consciousness into physical creatures and things and experience the universe from inside them. Sort of like how we experience our dreams from inside the dream character that's representing us. That's what life is.
And what I've shared in my own understanding is that we are the existential experience of all that is.
Yes. And that one of the things I found was really cool, all of our experiences go, they get uploaded to Source, or else they're there just by virtue of, you know, what we call the soul is what we truly are. That's our eternal self. Maybe the soul just automatically uploads it during life. I don't know. But all that information is what makes Source all-knowing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's kind of like, instead of calling it artificial intelligence, it's ultra-natural intelligence.
Yes. And the experiences of everything throughout the universe, every star, every gas, every creature, plant, thing, it's all uploaded.
So now we have life and we have creation. What's the purpose of death?
To go home. That's all. Everything in the universe has a life cycle, including the universe itself. And when that life cycle is complete, we go back home. Home being what some people call heaven, but it's actually just a state of infinitely higher awareness, infinitely more loving, blissful. It's wonderful, Victor, but you know, when I was there, I realized there are wonderful things about human life too that we just ignore or take for granted.
And what would you share with those who fear death?
That is a natural reaction and impulse and emotion that the bodies we inhabit experience. I believe we should honor it and plan for our body's eventual demise and talk with our body about it and try to reassure it. But know ultimately that we, the personality that you think of as yourself, that you love as your individual or as your individuality, as your personality, as your character, as your very self, isn't the body. That's just an animal we ride. You go home, back to the love, back to source, back to being accepted and happy.
I am approaching 70, and from the time that I was a child, I felt like I was much older than my actual age. And I've been labeled and called and have a sense that I'm what they call an old soul. Is there such a thing as a young soul? And if we are old souls, why do we keep coming back?
I learned from Source that all souls were created at the same time. So there aren't really any old or young souls, literally. I think that that sensation that you had of being an old soul, I had too, from the time I was a little tiny baby, is those of us who have incarnated into human life a lot feel like we're old souls because we're old hands at it.
And do we come back for a reason? Is there a choice in this?
Oh, it's always a choice. We incarnate because that's what we were created to do. And we incarnate as we choose, when we choose, if we choose, and into what we choose. I learned there are three purposes of life, or three purposes of incarnating anyway. One that's more rare is you incarnate to complete a specific mission. Like maybe you are supposed to do something that has a profound impact on another person's life. And they, without your being there, they wouldn't have that impact on their human life. And that's what they want, and that's what you want. So you agree to come into human life together. You do your thing, has the impact. And then the rest of your life, if you're just the catalyst, is supposed to be fun. Another purpose is to be a support person. And that's where two souls agree they're going to incarnate into human life together. And often the one that needs the support is what we would call a young soul, somebody who hasn't been here that much before. And then a quote, older soul would be the support person. And, you know, one would incarnate into one human and the other would incarnate into something like a spouse or a child or a rabbi or a teacher, you know, somebody who would normally be looked at as a support type person. And so if that's your purpose, you spend time supporting your loved one, the other soul that you incarnated with, and the rest of your life is supposed to be fun.
Absolutely. And I think older souls or people who have reincarnated more often learn that later in life. We come back to do the work and sometimes neglect ourselves in the process, but ultimately we get there. My guest is Nancy Dannison. She's the author of Backwards: Returning to Our Source for Answers, Backwards Guidebook, Backwards Beliefs, Answers from the Afterlife, and Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Nancy, please tell our listeners where they can get all of your wonderful books and find out more about you.
Well, my books are available at just about any online bookstore. Amazon sells, always has them in stock, says Barnes & Noble. And you can find out more about me. I have a YouTube channel with like 20 videos on it. I have two websites. One is nancydannison.com, NancyDannison.com. And the other is backwardsbooks.com, because I didn't know I was going to go past three books named backwards.
And we'll be back with more of Nancy after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week, Nancy Dannison, will be talking about her latest book, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. So, Nancy, you were talking about the purposes of life and you said there's a third purpose. What's that third purpose?
The third purpose is the one that is shared by most souls that incarnate. And I guess you could call them young souls, but we pick a theme. Like we choose to incarnate and we choose, you know, what our purpose will be. But most of us pick something to experience, to learn about for source, something that source cannot directly experience for itself. So oftentimes it will be something that physical creatures do experience that might not be what a human would want to pick. Like maybe our theme will be greed or resentment or depression or what it's like to feel like a fraud when you're a big movie star. You know, something that is unique to the human lifestyle that source can't experience directly. And then we will incarnate over and over until we get 360 degrees of everything there is to know about that experience, about that theme. When we're not pursuing our theme, we're supposed to have fun. Nobody's theme is a 24/7 job. I get a lot of questions from readers who say, why would anybody pick a life of suffering? Well, nobody does pick a life of suffering. It's just that human nature is such that it dwells on the hurtful, the negative, the harmful, and doesn't even look at, much less appreciate, the good things in life.
Absolutely. As wonderful as this experience that you had, your near-death experience must have been, you came back. Was that by choice?
I don't know. You know, I kept saying somebody's got to tell those people, which you can kind of say was my choice. But I felt like I was sent back. I don't know, because I was also saying I didn't mean me. So I had both, you know, conflicting emotions. But it was very clear that I was given this mission. And Victor, I don't know if you know this, but I had two other afterlife experiences where I went back to the afterlife because I was called back to talk to a group of light beings about how I was doing in my mission. And the first one was basically a slap up the side of the head. I mean, you know, these are loving, unconditionally loving, accepting, wonderful, blissful beings. They wouldn't literally make anybody feel like they're slapped up the side of the head. But that was the effect it had on me, because they said, you're not really working your mission here, kiddo. You know, get with the program. And that's when I, well, I didn't do it right away. It took a bunch of years. But I eventually started writing my books and speaking to groups. And I joined the International Association for Near-Death Studies.
You shared that you grieved returning to this life for 7 years. Is that the period of time you were talking about?
Yes. And I've read research that says that that's fairly common, that it takes that long to integrate, your afterlife experience with human life experience. And during those 7 years, I got progressively ill. I had brain damage from, lack of oxygen. And that started manifesting in my body as all kinds of physical problems. I couldn't hold a normal blood pressure. I couldn't hold a normal temperature. I still can't. I couldn't hold a normal heartbeat. There were times I couldn't sit up for any length of time. I mean, it was just one thing after another. And then eventually I went into the afterlife for a third time to meet with my group of light beings that were monitoring my mission. And they told me that Nancy was dying And I had the choice. I could come home and they would not hold it against me that I hadn't completed my mission, or I could go back into Nancy. But if I chose the latter, we would both suffer for the rest of her natural life. And so, you know what happened? I said, "Don't pick me for the suffering, you know, send me back for the suffering." I did that mostly because I didn't want to be a failure. You know, I didn't want to fail all those who should have been told about what I learned and experienced in the afterlife. I also wanted to see what was going to happen.
For those who are not believers, did you ever cross-examine yourself to validate your experience?
I went into all three of the experiences as a scientist and a lawyer. I mean, that was my attitude. It was show me the money the whole way. You know, it's like, okay, prove it to me. Show me the evidence. And so I think because that was my attitude during the whole experience, I didn't really feel any need to cross-examine myself later. Other people cross-examine me. Feel free if you want to do that.
Tell us a little bit more about the physical side of the additional two experiences.
The second one, I don't think I was ill. I think I just, you know, went into the after. I don't know how I got there. I don't remember.
Would you call it out of body?
Oh, I was definitely out of body. I was in the afterlife. My body was dead and I was in the afterlife. I just don't remember much about that experience. I think they kind of wiped that from my memory. But the third experience I remember really well. I had extremely low blood sodium and was actually dying. So I died, went into the afterlife. And when I came back into the body, I went, uh-oh, and I called 911. And I was in the hospital for 3 days while they brought my sodium back up.
And each time you had that meeting with those light beings?
Yes. They were different ones, too. The ones I met the second time were different from the ones I met the third time. Oh, Victor, the third time, my parents, Nancy's parents were there. I mean, they were light beings, but for just like a second, they put on the faces of my mom and dad, as you know, Nancy's mom and dad. And it was so wonderful to see them again because they both have been dead for a long time. And then there was a latecomer came into the gathering, and we were all kind of sitting around a big conference table. And he came in and sat on the edge of the conference table. He put one haunch up on the edge of the conference table and looked right down at me and said, "Surprise." And I was surprised because you know what? It was a human who had not died. It was a guy I knew from my gym.
Wow.
And I thought,
interesting.
Wow, I must really be in trouble if they're calling in field agents.
What were those light beings like? Describe them for us, please.
They were just lumps of light. And they were kind of shaped. And I don't know whether this is me projecting it on or whether this is how they actually appear to a human. But they were, kind of had a head and kind of like shoulders, but the rest of it was just lump. But it was a lump that emanated light from within, like a light bulb does. And the light, you know, came out from within.
You know, it's fascinating to me that science has started proving some of the stuff we're talking about. In 2010, I believe it was, they recorded photons coming out of a living human body for the first time. And the essence of who we are is that light, that energy, isn't it?
Yes. Source energy. All energy is source energy. We just, as humans, call it different things.
We separate ourselves intentionally, don't we?
It's necessary to believe that we are cut off from our creator so that the experiences we have will generate genuine emotions and so that we won't manipulate the system. You know, like if you knew nothing you did mattered and you were going to go back to source, you know, there are a lot of people who would just go out and act like wild animals. Hey, that's what's going on right now. But it's also a protective feature because we would not be able to learn. We would never be surprised. We would never have the joy of working toward a goal, if we knew what we were and knew why we were here and knew what the outcome was going to be.
Absolutely. Your latest book is entitled Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. What inspired this book?
I have spent, well, since 2007, was when my first book came out, gathering stories about manifesting. I finally got enough to use as examples and demonstrations in my book. One of the topics that I was really, you know, pounded into me in the afterlife was manifesting. I got it three times in three different ways. And the last way was directly from source. And I was told humans have completely misunderstood manifesting. And I didn't know what they were talking about until I finally saw a video for the book, The Secret, that was about the law of attraction. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, that's what source was talking about. Humans think there's a law of attraction.
So let's look at that. What, first of all, for those who are not familiar, and I'm sure most people are, but for those who are not familiar, what is the law of attraction? And why do you believe that it's not true based upon your near-death experience?
My understanding of the law of attraction, and I know there are little variations on it, is that it's a human theory that was imagined, created, thought up more than 100 years ago, whereby humans, if they think about something that they want, and if they align their thought vibration with the vibration of the thing that they want, they can pull that thing into their human lives. The reason why I think that that doesn't exist is twofold. One, source told me it was a misunderstanding directly. And two, I watched the creation of the universe. I witnessed it firsthand, and I remember doing it as source. And I saw that when source expelled all this energy that created the universe, it also created what we would call laws of nature, or scientific, humans would call them scientific laws. And I saw that, you know, there's a law of gravity, there's a law of molecular cohesion, there are laws of, you know, chemical bonding. Source did not create a law of attraction.
And so how may we as humans in this life use that energy to better ourselves and to better our world?
What I was, you know, pounded on in the afterlife to understand is that there are two big engines in life. One's biology, the other is manifesting. We can influence biology by our behavior, but we can't change it, you know, at the basic level. Manifesting is what we can change. We souls inside these bodies unconsciously manifest every event, every opportunity, every experience, every relationship, everything about our human life that's not biology-based. We manifest it based on our truest and deepest beliefs, most of which are formed in infancy or early childhood, sometimes during other, you know, times in our life. But these beliefs are the core of, you know, who we are, what our place in the universe is, and what we believe that the world is. So we literally create a human life to match our beliefs. And if those beliefs are hindering us, or if they're harming us, or they're just flat out wrong, we'll live a human life of all kinds of stuff that we really wouldn't choose if we'd known better. So we can access those unconscious beliefs, bring them out into the light of day, look at them as adults and say, well, I don't know why I think that, you know, and there are methods for correcting correcting erroneous early childhood beliefs. And once you've corrected them, then you will start unconsciously manifesting healthier aspects to your life, more happiness. And that's what Create a New Reality is about.
It's been said that everything is an energy, which is something that you've established. And then it's said that intention guides it, brings it into reality. Is that true?
Yes, I would say that's true. Source's intention to create a universe is what brought it into reality. I learned in the afterlife that manifesting or bringing something into reality has two components. One is attention. The other is intention. And attention is, in its simplest form, just putting your mind to it, you know, thinking about what it is that you want to do or have or be, or, you know, it's just focusing on it. Intention has to be at the soul level, and it's the expectation that you will create something in a human life, create literal physical reality.
Awareness and action.
Yes.
My guest is Nancy Dannison. Her latest book, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. We'll be back with more of Nancy after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Nancy Dannison. We're talking about her latest book, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Nancy, what spiritual powers may we use to serve others and improve our world?
To serve others. All the spiritual powers that I learned about were basically to improve our own incarnated life. The ones that I think can help others or influence others are unconditional love. We can give unconditional love. There are four other, what I call the five superpowers. One of them is self-healing, so that has to do with your own body and emotions. Another one is called having multiple simultaneous levels of awareness. And we can use that not only to help ourselves, because there's a technique for using it to access our spiritual powers, but also because with that ability to have multiple simultaneous levels of awareness, we can put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. You know, that's the ability that lets us take a different perspective and see somebody else's side of things. And that is extremely helpful in human relationships.
Empathy.
Yeah, empathy. I mean, I've lost, okay. And another one is we have the ability to access universal knowledge, all that knowledge that, you know, everything in the universe is uploading to source, plus the knowledge it has on its own. That's really for our own edification. Although you some of the information that you access through universal knowledge might benefit somebody else. And then the fifth one is manifesting. And we manifest only for ourselves. We can co-manifest with other souls and create events together. So that's helpful for both ourselves and others.
When you talk about co-manifesting, there have been groups that have gotten together and feel that if you get a certain number of people together who are creating a visualization of the same outcome or goal, that this can be manifest. Is that what we're talking about?
No, that's really a human endeavor that's misunderstood to be manifesting. Manifesting literally takes the attention and intention of the soul, not the body. I was taught in the afterlife that the body can be involved in the attention phase, like the visualization of something, like, you know, if a bunch of people get together and visualize a better environment. That can be the attention part of the formula, but the intention part has to be alone. It has to be the soul in its own mind without a human body in the picture. And so the way that I was taught how to do that is you have to completely shut off the human body, shut off all the senses, like be in a sensory deprivation type of environment, and then step back and watch the body, watch thoughts come into the mind and push them out. Watch the next thought come into the mind and push them out. And once you get into that position where you can observe your own body thinking, then you're in your own mind as the soul inside the body. That's when you form your intention.
During your experiences, you share in your books that you saw events that would occur in the future, including the end of humanity as we know it. Can you please describe some of these events and what ultimately causes the demise of humanity?
Some of the events have already happened because, you know, I got that vision of the future in 1994. I saw, to my surprise, that there are a lot more planets than the nine that I was, you know, I learned about in elementary school. And I saw that, you know, in the future, humans would discover them. And in fact, the 10th planet has been named Sedna, and it's, you know, kind of like a mini planet. And then I think there are something like 8 or 10 more beyond Neptune that are, they haven't been labeled as planets. They're just objects that they've been discovered. I saw a lot of what's happening now, you know, the tsunamis, the flooding, the volcanic eruptions, the hurricanes, the dread diseases spreading everywhere, you know, just an increase in human violence, you know, just all the things that we're seeing in the news and in everyday human life right now. What's the future? And what was the other thing?
The future, the end of humanity.
Oh, end of humanity. I saw, you know, when I was watching basically our solar system and saw Sedna, the new planet, and all these other planetoids, I saw that Mars was a green, vibrant, verdant, living planet. And then something happened that, you know, ripped off its atmosphere and turned Mars into the red planet that it is now. And I also saw in the future of Earth that Earth goes the same way Mars did. I don't remember what that was. All I remember is thinking to myself, oh, Earth goes the same way Mars did. So it will eventually become an uninhabitable planet.
And did you see us departing this world?
No. But you know, Victor, I wasn't coming back here. So I didn't pay that much attention to the future. I didn't care.
Nancy, what would you share with those who have recently lost loved ones and are grieving?
I've been through that like all of us have. From my perspective, I think it's important to spend time with your loved one. Let them know they are not alone. Let them know that you are there to support them, that you know, whatever they need, you will provide it, and that you won't let them die alone. Let them know that you love them unconditionally, that you understand they may be afraid. Let them speak their fears, even if it's over and over and over and over and over. But just be there and be their love.
And after transition?
You don't have to worry about them after transition.
No, I'm talking about the ones who are grieving after the transition of loved ones.
Oh, you mean dealing with the grief after their death. Part of the reason I wrote my books was to bring comfort, you know, to people throughout their lifetimes, but especially when they're grieving, so that they could see what it is that their loved one, you know, went back to, and how happy and pain-free and totally loved and accepted they are. And hopefully it's, you know, learning about what I experienced in the afterlife will take some of the sting of, you know, losing a loved one. And part of the information in my books is that, you know, when we incarnate, particularly into humans, we don't put all of our energy into the incarnated part. The rest of us stays in the afterlife. So we, you and I and everybody else, there's a part of us still in the afterlife with the people who've passed on from human life. We've never left them. They've never left us. We've always been together in the afterlife. It's just this little part of us that's incarnated into the human body that feels like it's kind of like asleep, like an arm or a leg that's asleep, you know, to the rest of us that's in the afterlife. It's just this little part of us that's asleep in the human world that misses the part of a loved one who is asleep in the human world too. And I also learned that we can communicate directly. We don't need to go through mediums or psychics or anybody else. We can communicate directly with our loved ones, both in the afterlife and while we're still in human life.
And how do we do that?
The easiest way is through dreams. That seems to be the easiest mechanism for our loved ones in the afterlife. And so you just form your intention before you go to sleep. You know, I'm going to talk to mom. And, you know, you do that every night, and it's not going to be every night mom comes and talks to you, but sometimes she will. And I've had that happen. The unfortunate part about having a communication during dreaming is that, like all other dreams, when you wake up, it's gone. But during the dream, you're having a conversation with mom, and you can carry that comfort with you after you wake up, even if you don't remember exactly what happened in the dream.
And from all of your experiences, we can absolutely, positively say there is no such place as hell.
Correct. Source had no reason to create some place to punish itself. You know, we are Source. Why would Source punish itself? Why would Source create us to incarnate into the universe and have experiences foreign to its own nature and then punish us for doing it?
Absolutely. What hopeful message would you end with today?
I believe that if enough of us focus our attention and intention on creating a better world, you know, reducing the violence, reducing the craziness, reducing the self-absorption and selfishness and hatefulness, that if enough of us put our attention and intention toward that goal, we can move the needle off where it's stuck right now.
Absolutely. As Jimi Hendrix said, when the power of love exceeds the love of power, we will find peace.
That's perfect.
Absolutely. My guest, Nancy Dannison, her books, Backwards, Returning to Our Source for Answers, The Backwards Guidebook, Backwards Beliefs Revealing Eternal Truths Hidden in Religions, Answers from the Afterlife, and her latest that we've been talking about, Create a New Reality, Move Beyond Law of Attraction Theory. Nancy, please, one more time, share with our listeners where they can get your books and find out more about you and this wonderful work.
My books are available at just about any online bookstore. And in foreign countries, you might have to look around for a local supplier of my books, but you can get them just about every country.
And your websites, please.
Yeah, you can also buy my books and learn more about me at my websites. One is nancydanison.com, NancyDanison.com. And the other is backwardsbooks.com, BackwardsBooks.com.
Nancy, you shared with me offline that there's another book coming. When is that coming out?
Oh, I don't know. I was aiming for this year, but I've started doing monthly webinars, and those take a lot of time, so I'm really behind on my book. But it's going to be about those of us who have had the deepest afterlife experiences and the fact that we've all learned the same lessons I'm telling you about today.
Wonderful. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us again and sharing your experiences, your learning, and your wisdom.
Thank you so much for letting me talk on your show, Victor.
You're so welcome. And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.